Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. We're going to begin this hour by focusing on, firstly, church news and current events in light of church teaching, joined by my friend Dr. Matthew Bunsen, who ever generously lends us his time every week. President Trump has invited the Vatican and several other European countries to join what he wants to call a Board of Peace. He wants to oversee the reconstruction of Gaza, and in his intent, this commission, this board, might well supersede and replace the UN's Security Commission. Dr. Matthew Bunsen has the details of this, and he also honors the late Vatican journalist John Allen, who passed away in his 60s recently, yesterday. And what's most important to remember about especially John Allen is his contribution to revitalizing what Catholic journalism could look like, especially as a Vatican correspondent and reporter and commentator. John Allen paved the way for a robust, intellectual, honest, and insightful way of doing Catholic journalism. And so his contribution cannot be understated. Matthew and I talk about that. We go on from there to speak with the pastor and chaplain of Fernando Mendoza. Everyone who follows football will find that name to be completely recognizable. On Monday, the Indiana Hoosiers football team, historically one of the worst programs in the country, completed a dream undefeated season by winning the national championship. They were led by quarterback Fernando Mendoza. He's a devout Catholic whose faith informs his life, the life of his parents, and he's never backed down from declaring the centrality of his faith in his life. Went on to win the Heisman Trophy. Father Patrick Hyde, his pastor, and also pastor of the Catholic Center at Indiana University, joins us to talk about how he has seen sporting programs and events work as analogies for the liturgical life, for the life of faith, and also to talk about his experience of Fernando and his family and how the Mendoza family lives out their Catholic faith. Finally, we speak with my friend Dr. Randall Smith. Is doubt a sign of a lack of faith? Well, it really isn't. All this after the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, January 22nd. It's the Feast of Blessed Laura Vicuna. Today's news brought to you by Visiting Angels, providing loving care and assistance for seniors in need. VisitingAngels.com. Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin has confirmed the Holy See has received an invitation from President Donald Trump to join his Board of Peace. Speaking to reporters, Cardinal Parolin said they're considering the invitation and that will require time to give an answer. Trump's Board of Peace aims to address global conflicts, circumventing the current structure for such events, the United Nations Security Council. Several states have announced that they are joining the Board of Peace, and that includes Belarus, the United Arab Emirates, Hungary, Egypt, and Israel. Greenland's Prime Minister says the terms of President Trump's deal on the future of Greenland is unclear. Chris Caraggio has the details.
Jens Frederik Nielsen acknowledged he does not know what's concrete in the deal, while also noting that only Greenland and the Kingdom of Denmark have the mandate to make deals or agreements on their behalf. Nielsen's comments come a day after Trump said he agreed to the framework of a deal on Greenland's future. Trump ramped up threats of taking over the island in recent weeks, which unsettled other U.S. allies, including the United Kingdom and Canada.
A former school police officer in Uvalde, Texas, has been found not guilty of failing to protect students during a 2022 mass shooting that killed 21 people. The verdict came about after 7 hours of jury deliberation. Adrian Gonzalez pled not guilty to 29 counts of child abandonment or endangerment. Longtime Vatican reporter John Allen Jr. has died. Allen was 61 and passed away in Rome after a long struggle with cancer. Allen was the author of multiple books, including biographies of Pope Benedict XVI and Cardinal Timothy Dolan. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. As he does every week, we are joined by Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News, who generously lends us his time. Matthew, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Doing very well. Back from Rome and now anticipating what will apparently be a very cold weekend for a lot of people, including, I know, you in Michigan.
We're not looking forward to it, that's saying the least. So we've got a few things to talk about, and chief among which has to do with John Allen Jr.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. He passed away. Tell us about his legacy, his great contribution.
Yeah, I knew John for many, many years, dating back, I think, possibly to the end of the 90s, when at the time you served for a very long time, I think from 1997 to around 2014, as the Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter. Now, your audience is very familiar with the fact that the National Catholic Reporter is certainly one of the most progressive of Catholic publications that are out there. But John had a remarkable career as the reporter of what was happening in the Vatican. And he was considered one of the trailblazers in many ways of what we think of now as a modern Vaticanista, or an expert on the Vatican and how the Vatican is covered. I wouldn't say that he was the first celebrity Vaticanista, because in some ways that debases the significance, I think, of some of the things that he did over the years. But his coverage was certainly one of the first to gain wide traction, especially in this era of social media. And he was very much respected both in and outside of the Vatican establishment. He was well known to Vatican officials. He had contacts across the church. And when he left the National Catholic Reporter and essentially created or joined Crux, it was an important moment, too, because that opened up other vistas and avenues for his coverage. So he definitely is somebody who will be missed within the wider coverage of the Holy See.
Many remember him as one of the most, if not the most, authoritative writer on Vatican affairs in the English Catholic world. I know that's not even too big of a praise for him, but can you please speak to not only how prolific he was, but how good he was at ensuring proper reporting and commentating?
Yeah, he certainly was the author of many different books, including, as has been noted, several biographies of Pope Benedict XVI. Mm-hmm. He was very familiar with most of the cardinals in Rome. They knew him. I think they trusted him as a source. We know, for example, that he and his wife, Elise Allen, had a relationship, a friendship with Cardinal Robert Prevost at a time when Cardinal Prevost, prior to his election as Pope Leo XIV, wasn't really that well known within, in many ways, even Roman circles. So he was able to anticipate, I think, not for advantage in things, but because Cardinal Prevost was somebody who was worth knowing and they got to know him. But that tells you as well about the insights that he had into the functioning and culture of the Roman Curia, of the Holy See, of the Roman journalistic establishment. And it's why he was also heavily prized by organizations like the Boston Globe, NPR, and of course, I believe he was also a longtime correspondent and Vatican expert for CBS. So all of these really coming together demonstrate the trust that a lot of people put in his coverage. And he was also very good in providing analysis in layman's terms about what was happening in Rome. So in that sense, too, he was helpful in introducing new audiences to the Holy See at a time when social media was exploding, and at a time, too, when, unfortunately, across so much of the media landscape, there has been a marked decline in the resources committed to the covering of religion, Catholicism in particular, and the experts have just declined as well, that you don't have as many as we used to. They've been replaced in some ways by amateurs or by social media influencers, which is, of course, a very different thing from a dedicated Vaticanista or papal expert.
You're completely right, because there was a certain integrity with which John Allen and Elise conducted their work. And can you please speak to how, because of him, he pioneered a certain enlivening and enriching of the work of reporting and commentating on Vatican affairs?
Yeah, I think he made things interesting. He, as I was mentioning, he's able to bring down a distill what can be a very abstruse set of facts and traditions and everything else into a way that anyone could follow. I know he did a lot of work with CNN. I can think, for example, of doing several segments with him during Pope Francis's visit in 2015 on CNN. And he had a real skill for helping to introduce people to the concepts and some of the key themes of the papacy, but also in analyzing what exactly Pope Francis might have been trying to do with his visit to the United States, for example. And his insights, I think, were always appreciated. But he was also part of what is this very exclusive group of reporters who have the privilege of working every day covering the Vatican beat. And there's a sense that this is a very glamorous job, but like any other journalistic enterprise, it's a lot of hard work. And it, having spent time myself covering a lot of Vatican events in the Sala Stampa, it is distinctly unglamorous in how one goes about the practical aspects of reporting. And John was exceptionally good at those practical aspects and translating that into very good copy and hence very good coverage.
And his legacy is going to live on because so many others have been raised to continue in that kind of a vein of integrity and accuracy, but also depth. I want to switch gears here, Matthew, to talk about the Board for Peace of Donald Trump. I know. I've been chuckling about it, too. And maybe we can address perhaps the silliest rumor that the Pope was asked to sit on it and he had to buy in.
Well, we know that first, let's talk about what we're talking about when we say the Board of Peace. Mm-hmm. This is a creation on the part of U.S. President Donald Trump to craft basically an international body that he will oversee that has as its primary function managing the governance and the reconstruction of Gaza. So this is obviously an immense undertaking. And invitations were sent out to world leaders. We know that he met with many of the participants, the new participants in Davos, where he has been sort of holding forth and holding court, as the president is very skilled at doing. And some have questioned, well, is this Board of Peace intended in many ways to replace the United Nations? What does this do for multilateralism? And of course, trying to have as its primary goal strategic oversight, mobilizing international resources, and ensuring various forms of accountability as Gaza tries, as it does, to transition from Hamas, which is a terrorist organization, into some functioning democratic or functioning government, period. So we have learned that an invitation was sent to Rome, and Cardinal Pietro Parolin confirmed this after an event at one of the pontifical universities, that the Vatican City State did receive an invitation to join the board. Now, the big question is, what exactly Pope Leo is going to do with it? And one sticking point, and I think you said something very important, Marcus, is that permanent membership in it is contingent upon the payment of $1 billion, which we presume is intended to support those very resources that the president wants to be placing into this pot, mm-hmm. so to speak, for the reconstruction of Gaza.
Now, we're down to about a minute left in the segment, but the wonderful thing is that the Holy See, under the auspices of Pope Leo XIV, as usual, has given a calculated response as they deliberate properly. Matthew, thank you very much for making the time to speak with us.
It's great to be with you, and we'll keep John Allen in our prayers, and we keep the Holy Father in our prayers, as we always do.
Amen. My guest has been Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. We've been talking about church news and current events in light of church teaching. Pray for the repose of the soul of John Allen Jr., and continue to pray for our Holy Father, Pope Leo XIV. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
This program is brought to you in part by the following nonprofit, Christendom College.
Each summer, hundreds of high school juniors come to Christendom College for the best week ever. A week-long experience of classes in philosophy, literature, history, and theology, daily mass and adoration, activities like canoeing, debating, dancing, and bonfires in Virginia's Shenandoah Valley. Students leave with a deeper appreciation for the liberal arts and lasting friendships that stay with them long after the weekend ends. Learn more at thebestweekever.com.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria, Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at avemaria.com. That's avemaria.com.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Joining me to have a conversation about what's happened at Indiana University is Father Patrick Hyde, Dominican friar and pastor of St. Paul Catholic Center at Indiana University. Father, it's so great to speak with you. How are you?
Yes, good to be with you, Dr. Peter. Thanks for having me.
I'm very glad to be able to connect with you. Now, for some of our listeners who don't follow the sport or don't know enough about the details of what's been going on, can you just walk us through what we know has been happening, especially with Fernando Mendoza?
Sure. Well, the basics are, with regards to the team, is that Indiana University was, until very recently, the losingest program at the highest level of college football. And over the last 2 years, they've gone from perennial loser to now national champion. And this year, they've been led by Fernando Mendoza as their quarterback. He won the Heisman Trophy, which is the highest honor in college football. And he has is a devout Catholic and has been a member of our community here at St. Paul Catholic Center at IU since his arrival in the last year.
And one of the things that you did that you did allude to has to do with the joy of the celebration. I want to ask you to share how that relates, that correlates to Christian joy.
Sure. I think sometimes, you know, we live in a world, we're emotional creatures. We have, that's a part of our life. And we can see that, or we can stay at that emotional level, but ultimately the emotions of joy and even of love will fade over time. But real Christian joy is the sharing of good things and the sharing of the most important thing, which is our faith and relationship with Jesus Christ and the salvation he offers us through the church with others. And so one of the great gifts of this year is not only been able to share in the joy of our victories on the football field, but also to share in the joy of our young men who are part of the team, who are also in our community, drawing closer to Jesus and having a bolder, richer faith. But then on top of that, and probably more broadly as the pastor on the campus of Indiana University, to see the joy and to experience the joy of a flourishing young ministry, a ministry of mostly 18 to 22-year-olds that has significantly grown. And it's grown because these young people, who so many of whom have been drinking salt water their whole life, have tasted the water that flows from the side of Christ and have found it to just be the thing, the one thing that's worth going all in for in their life. And the joy of these young people who are courageously, zealously following the Lord and sharing their faith in ways simple and great alike.
And I love that you draw from that illusion that they've been drinking salt water, because that you liken it in your piece to the Christian journey and how in this life of being in the church militant, the church pilgrim, we are consumers of our own salt water, so to speak. And there's a real struggle here. And so this life of supporting your favorite athletic team can be an analogy for the Christian walk.
It absolutely can. And one of the things we see in the Christian journey, and I think one of the great examples that Fernando Mendoza is, because he was not a very highly regarded athlete or player coming out of high school, is the pursuit of excellence and the discipline that is required in that, and that how when you do that consistently, you become better, and you also magnify the gifts and the talents of the people around you. And this is ultimately the path of virtue writ large, is that we're called to pursue excellence in following Jesus, and this requires sacrifices, this requires discipline, this requires learning from our mistakes. And when we do this collectively in the church, each of our virtue is strengthened and enhanced, and it magnifies the gifts, the talents, the strengths of the people around us. And so sports is a great analogy for, in particular, the virtuous life, because we can see how, and in Fernando's an example of this, you can start with anything and you can start anywhere. And if you follow the right path, if you do the right things, if you surround yourself with the right people, it'll grow, it'll magnify, and it will help other people in their own pursuit of excellence and virtue.
One of the things that you also bring out as a result of this is virtue doesn't exist in a vacuum. We're always looking for communal avenues for this. And so things like the Rose Bowl, the Peach Bowl, they become social liturgies, so to speak, that help bolster the ethos and sentiment of a community towards, hopefully, ultimately, the ethos of a church community and eternal life.
Yeah, I always tell people, one of the things that we don't realize and often don't experience emotionally, but is the great sorrow when someone is not at the Sunday Mass as a part of the community. It's the church universal. Mm-hmm. Even if you're not in your particular parish, the church suffers when the body is lacking at Mass. And so, but when we gather as a community, and this is one of the great joys that I've experienced as a pastor, as I've seen our young people and the young church flourish and grow, it makes the celebration of Mass and the celebration of the community at worship that much more wonderful and marvelous. It takes more of the burden off of the individual shoulders. When you're the only one or one of very few young people at Mass, it can feel like, wow, the weight of the world is on my shoulders. But when you're just one of the many, when you're a part of a community at worship, at prayer, it lifts you up in ways. And this is why we see, in particular at Newman Centers throughout the country, this resurgence is they go there and they realize, oh, I can actually be Catholic. I can be a part of something greater than myself. And it's a good thing, and it'll help me become a better person. And sports stadiums are a lot like that too. We go, we're a part of something bigger than ourselves. But ultimately with sports, that experience ends, whereas our pursuit and our walk with Jesus grows and strengthens over time, and it leads us into fresher waters and greener pastures.
Tell us about the witness of faith of Fernando Mendoza.
Yeah, so in my just personal experience, I see in Fernando and in his family people who are ordinary Catholics doing the ordinary work of putting that pursuit of God above all, praying as a community, praying as a family, exercising an ordinary and active sacramental life, and just trying to be generous to others. But I also see in his family one that, like a lot of families who struggle with any sort of illness or disability, where he's been tested and tried by fire because his mother struggles with multiple sclerosis. And when we have those major issues in our life, whether it be disability, illness, whatever, that can lead us in one of two directions, deeper into the heart of Christ and into the church, or we can pull back from that. And it seems to me, I haven't talked with them about this, but it seems to me that her illness has drawn the family closer together and has also brought them closer to their faith and to the Lord in the midst of that trial and difficulty.
And because of that, to draw this back to the work that you've been doing in campus ministry, it's become very clear in your writing, but also just from hearing you, young people don't need a watered-down saccharine version of the faith. They want the engagement, they want the seriousness, they want the answers, especially since if we don't give it to them, you're pointing out, the culture gives them lies.
Yeah, I think one of the things I grew up in I grew up in a world where it wasn't that the faith wasn't serious, it's that we intentionally made it a little less serious.
Mm.
Because we didn't want to put added burdens or pressure or stress on anyone because so many people were leaving and just walking away from the church. But I think inadvertently what happened is it says the faith isn't as important. And so as a Dominican friar, as a priest, and as a pastor, I see it as my responsibility to share with our young people how serious the faith is and to show them that if you are going to make this a priority in life, it's going to change you. It's going to form you. It's going to push on every aspect of your life. But it's doing that so that you can become holy, so you can become better. And so as a pastor, I see one of the most important things is if the church teaches us X, we have to teach that, and we have to teach Y, and we have to show that this is serious and that this helps us fit into this whole Catholic Christian worldview. We have to worship as if the Holy Mass, especially the Sunday Mass, is the most important thing we will ever do in our entire life. And we have to do the fundamental things of Christians. We have to pray. We have to serve the poor. We have to strive to conform everything in our life to the heart of Christ and to the heart of the church. When we do those few things with excellence, with intentionality, with prioritization, it invites our young people into this world and then gives birth to this multiplicity of ways in which we give glory to God by living out our life in the realities that we face, in the day-to-day life, in the most ordinary circumstances.
Father, I want to say thank you so very much for making the time to speak with us, and thank you for letting us connect with this wondrous event that's happened in your life and in the university's life. My guest has been Father Patrick High, Dominican friar, pastor of St. Paul Catholic Center at Indiana University, and we've been talking about the wondrous football victories that have happened at Indiana University, led, no less, by Fernando Mendoza, a beloved child of the Lord who has let his faith lead the charge. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization. Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Pope Francis said, "The key that opens the door to faith is prayer." Join St. Paul Street Evangelization by running a prayer station in the public square. You don't need to be a professional apologist or theologian. Just listen to the needs of the people you encounter. Offer encouragement, take prayer requests, and pray with people. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you feel as though life is flying past you? Are you desperate for a way to find moments of peace and quiet? Lord, Teach Me to Pray, the free Ignatian prayer series, will open your heart to His voice, to the peace you are seeking and the only love that fulfills the human heart, Jesus. God is calling you to true joy, knowing Jesus personally. Lord, Teach Me to Pray is free. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com, click on the red box, order the Lord, Teach Me to Pray series now. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com.
Hello, friends. Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers here. And I haven't been this excited about an up-and-coming speaker for a long time, Dr. Marcus Peter. Dr. Peter has the gift of combining deep theological insight, wisdom, and knowledge with personal testimony and story in a way that makes the power of the church's teaching and God's love felt deeply in the heart of all who hear him. If you are looking for someone for your next conference, parish mission, or event, look no further than Dr. Marcus Peter.
Visit MarcusBPeter.com to book Dr. Marcus Peter to speak at your event. At the Ave Maria website, you can continue the discussion and education through the Ave Maria Radio's links to social media. Ave Maria Radio has accounts on Facebook, X, TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the social media symbols at the top of your screen.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. What does this strange beatitude mean? Well, Father Victor Feltz points out that George Bailey and It's a Wonderful Life embodies this beatitude. He has to sacrifice his bucket list items and his dreams in order to save the building and loan company of Bedford Falls. But by the end of the movie, he realizes that he's truly the richest man in town. The Beatitudes challenge our understanding of happiness both as individuals and as a society. They're paradoxical and they upend our priorities. We don't need anyone to tell us that good fortune, money, and success do often make us happy. But we wouldn't have thought that the road to riches in God's kingdom is paved with meekness. It doesn't mean denying your gifts, but it does challenge us to allow others to have the spotlight and to approach them with gentleness. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Doubt is often presented as a sign of lack of faith, but can faith and doubt coexist? And if so, how? We know that from the events of Holy Week, even the apostles had doubts and questions, but the man of their deaths also showed their faith in spades. We discussed the nature of faith and doubt with Randall Smith, professor of theology at University of St. Thomas in Houston, Texas. Randall, it's great to speak with you again. How are you?
It's nice to speak with you again, Marcus.
So let's dive right into this question of doubt. We don't even have to speculate abstractly, like you mentioned. We see this in the biblical narrative and in the lives of witnesses in Christianity. So, painting with broad strokes here, let's talk about doubt and faith.
Well, as you know, and I suppose many people have felt in their lives that they know, well, you know, their lives are animated by faith. We're supposed to have faith. We talk a lot about faith. But then they may have doubts, right? There are times when they think, oh, I'm not so sure. You know, you may be listening to the gospel and you think, wow, did this really happen? Oh, wow, this is a lot to take in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And a guy, you know, rises from the dead on the third day. He raises somebody else from the dead. And it can be you just like, I don't know, right? You can have doubt. And so you think, I'm supposed to have faith, but I have these doubts. They come in. And you think, boy, does that suggest I don't have faith? And, you know, am I a bad Christian or a bad Catholic because, you know, I have doubts sometimes? And, again, what I say in this article and what you've pointed out from the article is, well, we don't have to speculate about that. I mean, there's plenty of the lives of the saints and, of course, the apostles in the early church who had doubts, expressed mm-hmm. doubts. John the Baptist had doubts. Even after he sort of said, you're the Messiah, you're the Christ, and he baptizes him, etc., etc. Later on, he sends and says, wait a minute, am I sure you're the one? There's doubting Thomas, of course, you know, and of course, there's Peter who, you know, abandons Christ. All the apostles abandon Christ. So we know that from that and from the lives of the saints, the two I mentioned are two which who are tremendous symbols of faith, namely Thérèse of Lisieux and Mother Teresa of Calcutta, some of the two great modern Teresas, right? And both of them in their biographies and in the descriptions that we have of their faith lives, they express tremendous doubts. Right. Mm-hmm. And horrible darkness that they had where they're just not sure. And so you think, oh, but they were saints. You know, well, even saints sometimes have their doubts.
And because of that, going back to Thomas, whom you highlight, one of the issues we run into is we just label him as doubting Thomas and be done with it. And any form of skepticism is seen as being a doubting Thomas. But this is also the same man who took the gospel all the way to India, if tradition serves us right, and who also was the only one who declared my Lord and my God. So the two can coexist.
Right. And, you know, it's one of those things, actually, if you think about it, right? I mean, I wouldn't want to support doubting in a way, but when you look at the lives of a Mother Teresa or a Thérèse of Lisieux, though they had tremendous times of darkness, and again, we might say doubt. Is it true? Is it true? Oh, it's so hard necessarily to hold on to it. They continued and persevered. And what I say, for example, about Mother Teresa of Calcutta, right, is that, look, there, you know, in spite of the times of darkness, and you can imagine times when looking around her in India, you know, she might have doubted, is this really making a difference? Is this really what I'm supposed to do, right? Is this really the way? You can imagine those doubts coming, right? Absolutely human, but she persevered in spite of that. If it had been absolutely clear, right, if it had been demonstrably obvious the thing that should happen, there would have been no need for faith. Faith is that evidence, right, in the darkness, the evidence of things hoped for, right, the substance of things unseen. And so, again, it's the fact that these people persevered in spite of their doubts. You know, we can understand their doubts because they're facing a kind of darkness,
right,
like things that are unseen.
And these things that are unseen mean that we don't operate in our faith on the level of concrete certitude. In fact, we will never receive concrete certitude for the matters of divine revelation. And I wonder if you can speak to, therefore, the difference between making arguments by way of fittingness versus the empiricist certitude that we seem to be swimming in today.
That's a big question, a very good question. now he's asking me philosophical stuff. Look, again, what we, and with good reason, right, we largely depend on things we can see and touch and measure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, look, when you go to the doctor, for example, all right, And you say, doc, I have this pain right here in my side. We don't want the doctor to say, ooh, ghosts, spirits. Could be, you're like, well, maybe you should just take a look. Couldn't we do an x-ray? Right? Mm-hmm. You want the doctor to have natural explanations for natural events. On the other hand, right, if I always say to my students something like this, if you come to me and you say, oh, I know my mother loves me, right, or I know I love my mother and my mother loves me, or you say that about a wife or a spouse or something like that, and I say, hey, demonstrate it, prove it with scientific evidence, well, you're going to look at me and go, I don't think it kind of works that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I would demonstrate through empirical proof, in quite the same way that we do in science, the existence of love. Right. So even when we come to the question of God, right, and people are talking about the Christian God, you could maybe convince people there's a prime mover, a creator of the universe. What's hard about sort of proving to people there's a Christian God is that what's involved with that is love. And I don't know how you prove people in the same way that there could be a God that's loving. I'm not sure how you would prove empirically that their mother loves them. They just, in some ways, know in a very different way.
And that's crucial to highlight, because that also goes back to that language of not just the Catechism, but also Aquinas, that faith is a virtue. And this virtue gives us a disposition to assent to truth. So you don't feel it, you don't always have evidence for it, but because it's true, you assent to it.
Yeah, again, I would suggest to people that, and again, it's not quite this way, but, you know, this is just the human thing. But when they say about, oh, no, I know my mother loves me, or I know my father loves me, or I know, you know, and the point is, well, what is that sense of knowing? Right. It's not the sense of knowing like you know that 2 + 2 = 4. Okay. But then you might say to yourself, well, there are days when, you know, sometimes you look around and there's mathematical things. You think, whoa, wait a minute. Is that, you know, you can even have, you know, your mind can be a little blinded about some of that stuff sometimes. But, you know, you just say to yourself, well, I know. And if somebody says, well, is it possible? Are there days when you have doubts?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are there days when you look at your mom or your wife and you think, oh, I'm not sure. And the point is, of course, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you don't really know it when you say that, right? And again, there are proofs. I mean, you could say, well, my mother would stay up with me all night when I was sick. My mother does this for me. Again, it's not a completely disembodied truth. It's not, right. In other words, it's not unreasonable. It's not contrary to reason. I mean, if you had a parent who is, or a husband that was beating his wife, and he said, oh, I love my wife, we'd say, no, that's irrational, mm-hmm. right? That's contradictory. But again, the knowing that you have when you know about love is something which may transcend the grasp of our concepts and our reason. That doesn't make it unreasonable. Does that make sense? I mean, yeah, again, people would say, in some ways, that makes more sense to me, the love that I care for people with, makes more sense to me than almost anything else in my life, actually.
Right. Which goes back again to what Pope Benedict XVI was saying in Introduction to Christianity about how, well, we're not going to be granted immunity from doubt. You know, we're going to be threatened by this continuous plunge into the void, like you rightly highlight. We're talking with Randall Smith about the question of faith and doubt and how they actually coexist in the fallen human nature, and how part of the Christian call is to grapple with that reality, and that faith is an ascent, believing what God has already told us. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
In her diary, St. Faustina wrote, "If only I had a spiritual director from the beginning, I would not have wasted so many of God's graces." If even the saints needed spiritual guidance, how much more do we? The nonprofit Revive app lets you meet virtually with certified spiritual companions, scheduling sessions at your convenience, helping you grow closer to Christ. Your first two sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's R-E-V-I-V, and then the number 3.
Ever get asked one of those tough questions, like, do Catholics worship Mary? And in that moment, you freeze? Truthfully, the Catholic AI app gives you answers in seconds rooted in scripture, tradition, and the magisterium. Whether you're navigating a tough conversation, deepening your faith, or looking for daily spiritual guidance, Truthly helps you know, live, and defend the Catholic faith. Truthly can be found in the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Truthly, T-R-U-T-H-L-Y.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
2026 promises to be a great year for travel to explore the Bible and our Catholic heritage. Steve and Janet Ray here. We're scheduling our favorite pilgrimage sites just for you to enrich your faith. Ireland, Lourdes and Fatima, our St. Paul Mediterranean cruise. As always, we have the best Catholic guides, hotels, and restaurants in our famous time-tested Footprints of God pilgrimages.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
Let us strive to know the Lord. Quick question to you and me right now. Is that what you and I are doing every single day? When you and I wake up every day, do we strive to know Jesus or not? In the Old Testament, in the same book of Hosea, a little bit later on, it's in chapter 14, the Lord says through the prophet, "My people perish." Or in another translation, "My people are being destroyed because of a lack of knowledge." Not a lack of data. We got tons of data. Not a lack of information. We got a lot of information. Not just about things that are happening in the world. We got a lot of data, a lot of knowledge, a lot of information about God. But not a lot of intimacy with God. Not a lot of relationship with God. Not a lot of friendship. That's the cry of God's heart. God wants to give himself to us in the incredible gift of friendship. And we're not taking advantage of it.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Talking with Randall Smith. He's no stranger to this program. He is professor of theology at University of St. Thomas in Houston, Texas. We're talking about the interplay within the fallen human nature of faith and doubt. I just spoke earlier, Randall, about Ratzinger's Westminster Hall address, which came on the heels of his Regensburg address, that magnificent piece. The truth of the matter is we do have a magnificent capacity for reason that's horrendously underrated. But even when utilized at its heights, man is still not going to be exempt from doubts about the divine, about divine providence, and even about the divine nature.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, this that wonderful address, and of course following up, same thing in John Paul II's Fides ad Ratio, on faith and reason, is the thing I always tell my students. Is one of the great, people should recognize this, it's one of the great ironies of the 20th century and of modernity, that it was the end of the 20th century, beginning of the 21st century. It was the Roman Catholic popes, John Paul II and Benedict XVI, who were exhorting the West not to lose their faith in reason. That's one of the amazing things, right? That it was the popes who had to say, no, we still believe in reason and reason's ability to come to the truth, and you guys have lost your faith in that. And again, it is a kind of faith that we have to have, that somehow our reason can come to the truth about things. And the church was never saying that reason, in fact, Catholics have been distinguished about this, that, reason can come to the truth. We just think that faith, right, pulls reason and, helps push reason beyond its boundaries in certain ways. But it was never the case that they sort of said, well, you just have to give in to unreason. Or as, certain people say, well, faith is believing six impossible things before breakfast every morning, mm-hmm. right? That's from Alice in Wonderland, right? No, that's not what faith is. That's a mistake to think of faith that way, right? Again, any more than to sort of say, I know my mother loves me, is somehow, well, that's just impossible. That's silly stuff that people say. No, there's a deep reality there. And so the church has never been against reason and what reason can do. In fact, they want to affirm that reason can come to the truth. It's just that they believe that faith also is a means to coming to true truth, right? Actual truth. It's not just imagination, it's not just emotion, it's not just feeling, it's truth, as true as 2 + 2 = 4.
This reminds me of what Augustine said in De Trinitate, about faith, and he's, of course, quoting from Hebrews, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things unseen. And so Augustine, I think he said it to the effect of, faith is to believe what you do not yet see, and so the reward of it is to then see what you believe.
Right. And again, this is why, for example, people have, well, there's a long tradition going back to the Middle Ages and before that of thinking about, and now I'm just talking about theology, but of course this is a general principle, all right, theology defined as an understanding of faith, or another way of saying it is faith seeking understanding, right? You begin with faith, all right, proposition, something, and then you say, gee, to what extent can I try to understand this, like the Trinity, right? You hear God is three persons in one being, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, but one God. All right, how can I start to understand that? And how could I start to, make sense of that and what difference that would make in my life if I believed in a God who was this eternal communion of love between three persons, which was being extended to me in and through the person of Christ and motivated in me by the Holy Spirit. I mean, so again, like, wow, that's, I don't know, that's a big thing, but maybe that would be a better way of thinking about my life.
And that's also precisely why, you know, you think of people like Soren Kierkegaard who speak of faith. Sure, you know, we have that reason, we have that fittingness and therefore kind of certitude even in that, but there's a threshold there. You know, Kierkegaard calls it the leap of the risk, I think. You're having to take that step that's beyond the bounds of what human reason can grasp.
Well, and again, I don't want to go on too much about the human, because again, I do think the divine is different. But even in the case, this is of course one of the things that people have when they think about, again, we're trying to understand, but think about marriage. And of course, that leap, which is like, oh, I'm going to marry this woman or I'm going to marry this man. And you think, oh my goodness, there's this, how will it work? Will it turn out? Will everything be okay? And the point is like, yeah, I admit there's a leap there, right? What's my future going to be? This is, again, going back to the Ratzinger book, The Introduction to Christianity. Yeah. He says, yeah, look, on what are you going to take your stand? The understanding, what are you going to stand on? And, again, everybody, I would suggest, has some faith that undergirds their life and their existence, whether they've reflected on it or not. And the point is, what could you take your stand on? Where you say, okay, this is what my life is going to be about. These are the principles or the values or the ideas that undergird my entire life. And I think Pascal in his wager has been misunderstood. I think what Pascal really wanted to do with his famous wager was not necessarily just make a proof of the existence of God. He wanted to tell the people he was dealing with, look, you think you could be agnostic. You think you haven't bet everything, but you already have bet everything. Your whole life is wagered on on the position you've taken on this. Because if there is a God, then that means everything. Right. And if there's not a God, then that means everything, too. But the point is, you're going to have to bet your life on that. And again, you already have. The way you live your life is, in fact, indicates the bet you've placed on what's really meaningful in life. So we can say, as Christians, we can say, when people act with selfless love, people who say they believe in an empty, meaningless universe act with selfless love, all we can say is, I think you've let the cat out of the bag. I don't think you really do believe in a senseless, empty, meaningless universe. Because you just acted in a way that your notion of the universe says you shouldn't have. If it's a senseless, right, empty, meaningless universe, well, then I guess you should just, it's a dog-eat-dog world, and you should kill or be killed, right?
Right.
But you didn't.
Right, right. And
so it shows you believe what we believe, you just don't want to admit it. Which is, okay, that's fine, but if you just came to the understanding that if that's what you want for your children, you want them to be raised with this kind of selfless love and care and generosity and compassion, well, we have an account of why you should do that, because
right,
we think that's what the universe is.
And that presents, therefore, this natural law that's written on the hearts of everyone. You know, there's this kind of moral analogy that's still beckoning the hearts of even those who reject, like you mentioned, those of us who have that illumination of divine revelation to make sense of all this.
Right. And the problem, for those others, in a way, is that, again, they just don't have an account which would make sense of the lives they've obviously chosen to live. Which is, again, they want their children to be generous and compassionate and loving. And we can only say, bravo, absolutely bravo. But you do realize that in the universe you say you believe in, right, there is no justification for that. You simply wouldn't live that way. So something is calling you, something more deep and profound is calling you to a different vision, right? So maybe you should just admit it. In a way. And again, that's why, going back to Ratzinger, he says, look, when we have doubts, the people on the other side, they have doubts, right? I mean, people who think the universe is empty and meaningless, don't you think there's times when they think, well, maybe it's true. Maybe God is a God of love. maybe there is a meaning to life in the universe, right? I mean, there might be times when they have what we would, you know, what they might consider doubts about their atheism. Maybe I shouldn't be an atheist. Maybe there is a God. Oh, right? They have doubts because we're both faced with these fundamental questions about the meaningfulness of life.
Right. And
so then the question becomes, what kind of life do you want to live?
And that's why it's so much easier to hide behind a kind of scientism, because then you don't actually have to grapple with those really large essential questions about your existence, like you said, you know, what kind of life do you want to live? Because then you have to ask yourself, what's the meaning of my life?
Right. I mean, it's very different to kind of say, again, like, is 2 plus 2 4? What's the structure? Could they be multiverses? Mm-hmm. Could they be kind of like, okay, fine, right? all that's fine. Now, how are you going to live your life, right? Are you going to get married? Are you going to be selfless? Are you going to devote yourself to people? Are you going to be kind and compassionate, right? How are you going to face death? That's the real stuff, okay, right? I mean, I'm an academic. I love talking about all this other stuff, but when you get right down to it, it's kind of like, okay, look, how are you going to live your life, okay? What are you going to base your life on? Selfless love, or no, it's all about, you know, look, I say to my students, look, if you think it's a dog-eat-dog world, okay, you know, that's just the way you're going to live. You can, I mean, I can say things, the church can say things, right. You know, Aristotle can say things. The truth is, in the end, if you're convinced it's a dog-eat-dog world, that's just the way you're going to live, because it's the only thing that'll seem reasonable to you, right? And so one of the things Catholicism has is the claim, look, it's not a dog-eat-dog world. It's a world which is created out of freedom and love by a loving God. So there, that's how you got to live.
And Randall, that's a perfect place to end. Thank you so much for making the time to speak with us.
Oh, thank you. It's always a delight.
Me too. My guest has been Randall Smith, professor of theology at the University of St. Thomas in Houston. And Randall has been expositing to us the reality that despite the fact that we have the great gift of the deposit of faith and therefore divine revelation, human beings in our fallen nature will still have doubt. And so we grapple at this from both sides, as people of faith, to also dialogue with people who have no faith and grapple with doubt. Thank you for joining us. I'm Marcus Peter.